Some killers attack complete strangers. Some target the vulnerable, the young, or the elderly. And some prey on people that they know. There are killers who are inspired by money or by revenge, by sexual deviancy, by hatred. There are opportunists and there are meticulous planners. But what unites these men and women is one simple trait, and it's the most terrifying thing of all. They live amongst us. In our towns, on our streets, in our houses. They're just like the rest of us, but capable of evil. And they could be anywhere. Welcome to Murder Town.
Do you feel it in the air? Oh.
Of the UK has its sinister secrets. Tonight, we're in Huddersfield, a northern town that's witnessed more than its fair share of horrors.
A body had been found in a shallow grave.
Dismembering somebody's body is such an undignified way to go.
There is no real, you know, limit as to what one person can do to another.
It's a gruesome end to a young man's life. Wanted to hug your own little family a little bit more.
It was in 2013 that a convicted paedophile called Robert Hind was released from prison back into the community.
Robert Hind, as I knew him, was a sex offender who had served a term of imprisonment and was now residing at a bail hostel. Most towns and cities would have some sort of either bail hostel or supervised living arrangements. It's a bit of a halfway house, really, between prison and independent living. And part of those conditions were that he was to abide by a curfew.
The hostel was in Dewsbury, a few miles outside of Huddersfield. Staff there were on alert to keep an eye on the former criminals who were now resident.
If they breached in the bail hostel, it's route one back to prison. We used to get people absconding, we used to get people not abiding by certain bail conditions, and then the bail hostel staff would make a decision then to phone the police. I got a call from the on-call detective inspector, and basically he said, well, look, we've got this guy from a bail hostel. He's gone missing. He's a registered sex offender. And therefore, the feeling was he must be caught as soon as possible. The evening that he went missing, staff were deployed to the hostel, and that's where you're going to get the bulk of the information, because hitherto he's been an inmate at prison. So it's not like he's really part of a community. He's not part of or being in touch with his family. You go to the people who you think you're going to get the information off. So in this particular incident, it was bail hostel staff and other residents within the bail hostel.
Hine's criminal background included two lengthy prison sentences for sexual offences against teenage boys. Cops were desperate to find him before he could do anything else.
We got pictures of Robert Hine leaving the bail hostel. So we knew what he was wearing. We knew the time he'd left the bail hostel. So really, we're trying to chip together really what he'd been doing during the day that he went missing and the evening.
Hind had last been seen at 9 a.m. and it was now the evening. Police were beginning to worry that Hind might be up to no good. So they put out an urgent appeal through the local newspaper, the Huddersfield Examiner.
Initially, we had a release from West Yorkshire Police who told us that a missing man, they were appealing for a missing man, Robert Hind, and they also perhaps unusually told us that he was a registered sex offender. So we issued the appeal and obviously wanted to help the police in tracing this man. From a public safety point of view, the public were to ring 999 if they came across anyone that they believed was Robert Hind.
If you're saying you've got a sex offender who's absconded from a bail hostel, then the public will sit up and take notice of that, because generally speaking, they will want that person recaptured as soon as possible.
Now police had some CCTV of Hind leaving his bail hostel, and they learned he'd possibly gone to visit a friend.
When we started conducting the inquiries into him being missing, both the staff at the bail hostel and some of the other residents in the bail hostel had said that he'd become quite friendly and had made arrangements to meet one of the previous residents of the bail hostel, an ex-convict, who had been resident there, I think it was something like 2 weeks before.
That man was David Mitchell, a convicted murderer who had spent the last 2 decades behind bars. Now it seemed that murderer Mitchell and sex offender Hind had struck up a villainous friendship.
Both David Mitchell and Robert Hind had previous convictions for serious crimes. They're both the same age and they've obviously both been in prison. And their unlikely friendship was formed partially due to the fact that they were excluded from society.
So now police knew Hind had absconded from his bail hostel and he could be on his way to meet a convicted murderer. Whatever was about to happen, police faced a race against time. In 2013, police in West Yorkshire were hunting for a sex offender who had failed to return to his bail hostel in Dewsbury,
just a few miles away from Huddersfield. 47-year-old Robert Hind had twice been behind bars for abusing teenage boys. He was now back in the community, and nobody knew where he'd gone.
If a sex offender goes missing, basically you start with the point that they're last seen. And then you start interviewing people who we spoke to, people who know him. You know, what has he told people that he's going to be doing? So really, we're trying to retrace his movements within the last few hours prior to him, prior to the curfew time. So you start following trail of phones and CCTV and associates to try and build together a picture of his movements, where he's actually been. And to see whether that is then in keeping with what he said he was going to be doing.
12 hours had passed since Hind was last seen, and their only clue was that as he'd left his bail hostel, he'd claimed to be on his way to visit a friend, a convicted killer called David Mitchell. Mitchell had only been on the streets a few weeks after being released from prison.
Thank you.
I knew David Mitchell for about 8 months in Kirkham prison. And he was an all right lad when he was in prison, like. I'd have just thought he'd have been in for burglary or something. I wouldn't have thought he'd have been in for murder. But when he said he was on his 19th year, I knew there was something wrong.
Mitchell even made up claims about why he was behind bars.
He said he was out one night, and then he got into this fight, and it was either him or this other lad.
But while David was claiming he was inside after killing someone in a fight, the truth was much more sinister.
In fact, he'd murdered his ex-partner in 1991. He'd bound her hands and feet before drowning her in a bath in the Almondbury area of Huddersfield.
David Mitchell had served, I think he's, like I said, just sort of 20 years in prison. And then he'd been moved from the prison to the bail hostel at Dewsbury, living under supervised conditions within the bail hostel. And then he'd gone to independent living. And it's only by virtue, really, that David Mitchell originally hailed from this area that the probation service had found him a house within Huddersfield. But he'd only lived there a matter of a few weeks.
Now back on the streets, he was about to get a visit from detectives, keen to know if he'd met up with missing sex offender Robert Hind.
It was two uniform cops who'd gone round there, and they asked him if they'd seen Robert Hind. And he said no, he hadn't seen him, he hadn't made an arrangement to meet him. The police officers asked if they could come in and look round his house. He allowed them to do that. There was no sign of Robert Hind there, and they accepted that at face value.
So wherever Hind was, it seemed it wasn't with Mitchell, and police were stumped. But they'd already begun to track down his movements since he'd last been seen at 9 a.m.
We started following a CCTV trail. We'd had him leaving the bail hostel, and the information that we got is that he'd headed into Dewsbury town centre to go to the bus station.
From there, it appeared Hind had bought a ticket to Huddersfield and journeyed the 12 miles by bus.
The police officers had obtained CCTV footage from Huddersfield station. And what was seen on that CCTV was that he had, in fact, met another man within the confines of the bus station. And that other man was the ex-convict, David Mitchell. Convicted murderer.
But Mitchell had denied meeting Hind, so whatever sinister plan had been laid, he'd wanted to keep it a secret.
Even though we'd been to his house and he denied that Robert Hind had been there, it was clear evidence that he had met him at the bus station. And once we had that information, that changed the dynamic of it. David Mitchell had demonstrated that he was capable of committing a serious crime, and i.e. taking somebody's life. It demonstrated that from what he'd done 20 years ago. And the question was whether he was capable of doing that again so soon after his release.
The homicide team were concerned that something terrible might be happening and desperate to stop it. After all, they were familiar with Huddersfield's criminal past.
In the 6 years that I've been here, there has been a murder definitely every year, or in some cases, two or three murders a year.
In 2004, Paul Walton violently stabbed his partner to death in Honley, following a string of assaults against lovers. And in 2007, Christopher Hawkins murdered his four-year-old son in the nearby town of Slowit. And back in 2007, there was another case which shocked the town and left students fearing for their safety.
Yeah, Huddersfield, a great news patch. It's a mixture of countryside, town, great urban areas, where it's a vibrant, multicultural, ethnic community. Student-wise, university has moved on phenomenally in the last few years. We're up to something like 25,000 students. A lot of students from overseas, though, come here, which is great. It really adds to the whole feel of the town, the cosmopolitan feel of the town.
In 2006, two of those students were Tobias Minsky and his girlfriend Rita, who'd made the journey from Poland.
They came as regular customers to the coffee kiosk that I was running. Came over to Huddersfield to study fine arts at the university with his girlfriend Rita. Tobias was always very, very well presented, very polite, really, really nice. He had something about him. His eyes were a really strong feature in his face, and I can clearly remember he had like a little beauty spot in the middle of his eyebrow. Just a really nice young boy. I know that Tobias had been out in the Camel Club with a number of friends. He was due to go and meet Rita after she'd finished her shift at Maimau, the bar where she was working.
But instead of meeting Rita, Tobias went out with some new acquaintances.
At some point, he's got friendly with people I don't think he knows, and then he's gone off with them. Simple as that.
I mean, Tobias didn't know these people. He'd left his friends inside. So I think they were all very surprised that he just disappeared without even saying goodbye. It was very unlike him.
And when Tobias didn't return home the next morning, his girlfriend immediately knew something was wrong, and word began to spread.
When you hear the news that somebody you know, that you're used to seeing a number of times a week, is missing, you know, it's quite an upsetting thing to hear. Rita, his girlfriend, came and asked if she could put posters up with a picture of his face on and the number to contact. It was very clear to see the pain and the worry was etched on her face.
Those posters were everywhere in the town centre. And he'd only been missing at that stage probably 24, 48 hours. Clearly, you know, Rita was doing everything she could to get his picture and his name out there. So you could feel that desperation. She just couldn't believe that he'd just disappeared like that. And there was a genuine concern within the community that somebody could just go missing like this, and yet nobody knew why.
As time went on, I think people then started to maybe lose a little bit of hope that, you know, he was okay, and you did start to think, you know, maybe something terrible has actually happened to Tobias.
More than a week later, there was still no sign of Tobias. With no innocent explanation, police began to piece together his movements on the night that he disappeared.
There was some CCTV footage that had been released, and that you could clearly see that it was Tobias on the footage. And that showed him, I think it was in the centre of town, actually going to a cash point and withdrawing money from the cash point.
At that point, then, he'd been seen getting into a taxi with people in Huddersfield town centre. They must have then traced where that taxi went.
The taxi drove west out of Huddersfield into the neighbouring town of Slawit.
It's just a nice little village. It's next to Huddersfield Narrow Canal. It's popular among tourists.
People go there, you know, every day for cycling, walking the dogs, walking with the children. I think you can go down there on a canal boat. So, you know, it's a really nice part of Huddersfield.
It's not a place where you would have expected Tobias to go. He lived in the town centre. He got into a taxi with three people. Two of them got out, and then there was just one person with him when he got out in Slathwaite, and then the trail went completely cold. It just as though he just vanished into thin air.
So,
Police now had a foreign student making a late-night visit to the rural outskirts of Huddersfield and disappearing. But what was he doing there? Who was he with? Why was a student so far from the area that he knew? Was he up to no good? Or had tragedy struck? In 2007, police in the Yorkshire town of Huddersfield were investigating the mysterious disappearance of a Polish student called Tobias Minsky.
He'd last been seen on CCTV getting into a taxi in the town centre with three men. But when the taxi arrived in the nearby town of Slawit, only Tobias and one unknown male remained. And from there, the trail had gone cold.
The job that I'm doing, we get people missing all the time. Certainly, possibly, if they're students, you know, they may have just gone walkabout, they may have gone off to friends, stayed with friends, they may have just wanted to go off for a weekend and not told anybody. We were hoping that he'd just contact us and say, I'm sorry, I didn't tell her. I just fancied a complete change. See, that didn't happen. Rita, who was his girlfriend, you know, she was really, really worried about him right from the word go. She just couldn't believe that he'd just disappeared like that.
The police, Rita's family, friends were searching for possibly 7 or 8 weeks, not really getting very much information.
Police scoured the small town. They even searched parts of the canal, concerned that Tobias had been the victim of a tragic accident.
Yeah, often when people go missing and there's water in that area, often, unfortunately, they are found in that water at some point. The river and the canal were basically the main areas that they were concentrating on. It's rare that somebody just vanishes and just not seen again, despite a load of people looking. I mean, the community were the eyes and ears, really. People were out there looking, I think, as they were going about their normal daily business.
But weeks later, there would finally be a breakthrough.
Some glasses had been found by a couple walking the dog along the canal, and the glasses had Polish writing on.
They were dark rim glasses, and they really there was something slightly different, and so I think they just saw them and thought, they just don't look right.
The couple who found them put two and two together and rang the number for the missing number for Tobias. And then it became apparent that the police were searching canal and they were searching the woodland area around it.
Once again, specialist police officers were in Slawit and about to make a grim discovery.
Somebody said there was some police tape on the canal towpath, which was between the canal and the river, in a piece of land where nobody would need to go.
It was released in the Examiner that a body had been found in Slawit, in a shallow grave. It was confirmed it was Tobias that they'd found. It was just so incredibly sad. I think I remember that day. You just wanted to hug your own little family a little bit more.
So the mystery of Tobias's whereabouts was now solved.
But now, police in Huddersfield had a murder investigation on their hands.
And their attention was fixed on the man who had shared a taxi with Tobias on his fateful last journey to Slawit.
No doubt they would have had a description of him from the taxi driver, but we had no idea who he was at that point.
But police were about to make a breakthrough when they discovered a suitcase in the river beside Tobias's body. And in the suitcase was a name. Daniel Sykes.
Sykes was a former soldier, Transpired that he was heavily in debt to the tune of £10,000. He was well-spoken, smart, called himself Mr. Daniel Sykes. So I lived on Roy Street in Slathwaite, which is only a short walk from here. So he would have been getting that taxi home. That's where he lives. Apart from that, very little is known of him. He'd never crossed our path before. And Tobias has somehow ended up hooked up with him. It's a complete mystery how he's ended up in that car with him.
Police now had a suspect, and after a series of interviews, they had enough to charge 25-year-old Sykes with murder. He admitted being at the scene, but refused to admit his guilt.
The story that Sykes gave in court was that they ended up going up to Canal Towpath and that they ended up in a fight, and that he left Tobias on the ground and went home. He then went back later, found Tobias in the river, face down, claimed that he'd drowned. For some reason, went and got a suitcase and tried to get the body in a suitcase. Couldn't fit it in the suitcase, and so then he's buried it in a shallow grave. But for some, again, freakish reason, has thrown the suitcase in the river where it's been found by the police. Basically, he left his calling card there at the scene of the crime. Bizarre's not the word for it. From the word go, it shows the power of the community, really. That image had certainly gone into people's minds, and they were out there looking for Tobias or anything that they found to Tobias, and ultimately that was the key that unlocked the case. I mean, Tobias is just so unlucky to have met Sykes that night.
It's shocking because you just don't expect it to happen in your own town. You don't expect a local person to do something like that. It's just really disrespectful that not only has somebody killed somebody at the prime of their life, they've treated that body with such disrespect as well, whilst trying to cover up what they've done. It's quite a gruesome end to a young man's life.
But in 2013, police in Huddersfield would again be on the trail of a mysterious and sinister disappearance. Convicted sex offender Robert Hind had missed his curfew at a bail hostel. Police feared he could be reoffending and began to track his movements.
He can't just go off on a wild goose chase, committing resources to really futile searches. It has to be directed and focused as much as you can.
The final sighting was CCTV in Huddersfield that placed him with a friend, convicted killer David Mitchell. Now police were exploring their friendship and learning more about David.
David Mitchell had served, I think he's like I said, just sort of 20 years in prison. And then he'd been moved from the prison to the bail hostel at Dewsbury. For a short period of time, it's only a matter of maybe 2 or 3 months, living under supervised conditions within the bail hostel. It did come to light through one or two of the residents that David Mitchell had made a couple of clumsy passes at some of the male residents. And they told us about those and said that they were surprised that he'd made a pass at them because they didn't believe that he was homosexual or had any of those tendencies.
I just got talking to him and then one day just pulled this magazine out and said, have a look at that. I said, you know what I mean, like a porn magazine, but with women. I said, I'm not that way inclined, like. And he said, well, 3.5 years is a long time, like. If you ever want a sexual favour, let me know. I said, no, I'm not like that, mate.
It seemed that Mitchell had developed an interest in men during his time behind bars, and he'd apparently focused his attention on Robert Hind.
Robert was, like I say, an overtly gay man who was HIV positive. And when police officers spoke to other residents within the hostel, they said straight away, oh, yeah, Robert openly accepts he's gay and HIV positive. We all know that. So it was no secret. He kept no secrets, really, from the other residents, it seems. But seemingly, during the time at the hostel, Robert and David struck up some sort of friendship, some sort of relationship.
Their unlikely friendship was formed partially due to the fact that they were excluded from society. They didn't have normal, for want of a better phrase, normal lives. They didn't go to work. They didn't have groups or associations because that part of their past made it difficult for them to form friendships. And that is ultimately why I believe they became associated with each other through the bail hostel where they were living.
Now Robert Hind had missed his curfew, and police needed to know why. But while their first assumption was that he was up to no good, the truth would be far more surprising.
When somebody like Robert Hind, a sex offender, goes missing, then time is definitely of the essence. And the longer that that he remains missing, the more concern you would have had as regards to his safety. Both the staff at the bail hostel and some of the other residents in the bail hostel had said that they were very, very surprised that he missed his curfew time. And he was, you know, very particular about complying with the rules and keeping his nose clean. And when it drops cold, like overnight, then alarm bells start ringing. There would be something there because he's been seen by a member of the public or CCTV, or he's been into a shop, or he's withdrawn his money. There'd be something, really. It had gone from Robert Hind being an absconder and effectively the offender to us then thinking, actually, he's probably come to some harm. The answer lies with the guy that he's met, David Mitchell. Robert Hind said he's going to meet him. He's phoning him. And now we've got him on CCTV that he's meeting him. David Mitchell immediately became the suspect. And I said, right, well, if that's the case, then we're going to make an arrest.
Early that morning, police swooped in on David Mitchell's home address. They hoped to find the answers to Robert Hind's disappearance.
Police officers went back, took him from his home address and took him to local police station for questioning. Bearing in mind that the only thing really to put to him at that stage was that Robert Hind said he'd arranged to meet him. He denied that he'd made that arrangement or that he'd seen him. The CCTV proved otherwise. So the questions were, well, OK, fine, you lied about that, why? And what happened from that point onwards. I think in the initial stages, David Mitchell had either said nothing or said very little about what had happened.
Once again, Mitchell denied any involvement with Robert, and his property wasn't giving up any clues either.
The police had seized the house, and we employed the services of the forensic team. There was no glaring forensics that were outstanding that would say, yeah, man A has attacked man B in this property. There was nothing obvious. Things were neat and tidy and clean, as opposed to, you know, obvious blood spattering and things like that. That wasn't evident.
So, with no forensic evidence and a convicted killer in custody denying any involvement, police were struggling to get any answers. In 2013, police in Huddersfield were questioning a man called David Mitchell. He's not long been out of prison after serving a sentence for murder.
Now he's been seen on CCTV meeting a sex offender called Robert Hind. With Hind now missing, police suspect that Mitchell might know where he is.
Very quickly, in subsequent interviews, he was confessing to, yes, having met Robert Hind at the bus station as planned, that they'd went back to his address in Huddersfield. He said that once they'd got back to his address, that they'd had sex, and that after having sex, David Mitchell claimed that Robert Hind had said to him that he was HIV positive. And what he said was that he saw red and, in a fit of pique, strangled him.
Police now had a confession, but still didn't know where Robert's body was.
He'd contemplated for a period of time about what he was going to do, and then he'd made the decision that, that he was going to get rid of the body. Went down to his local store and bought a little hacksaw and some pin liners. He said that he'd taken the hacksaw, put him in the shower, started running the shower, and dismembered his body with the hacksaw. Subsequently, forensic officers found minute traces of diluted blood in the shower cubicle, as it said. So he'd cleaned it up, but there was very small specks. Put the body parts into the bin liners that he'd bought, and then piecemeal had gone down to the canal when it got dark. And thrown him into the canal.
Specialist police divers had the grim task of searching the waterways.
The search that you may do for somebody who's missing and alive is, you know, very different to the search that you may do for a body. You know, if it's in water, for instance, there's deterioration, there's... Even in a canal, there's a small current. There's predators, as in animals and things like that. So time is of the essence. Obviously, the sooner you can commit resources to the right area, the better. And he was asked during interview, you know, whereabouts, if you could describe the location, to give the underwater search team members some sort of indication of where to start. And again, very, very quickly, a positive came back.
Canals tend to run through most major towns or cities, and generally speaking, they don't look very inviting places. You know, it looks awfully cold and dark. Basically, because of the admissions of David Mitchell, he'd really pinpointed where the police should look. And so within a short period of time, the underwater search team had found the initial body part, and the search really was concluded in a day. The waters aren't deep, they were able to recover all the body parts, and they even conducted a further search to find that small hacksaw, which he said he'd used and disposed of in the water, and they found that as well.
Once again, the canal network around Huddersfield had given up the final clues the police needed to solve a murder. 6 days after he was reported missing, the remains of Robert Hind were recovered. And despite Mitchell's claims that the crime had been committed in the heat of the moment, detectives believed otherwise.
I do think that he had the intention of killing him right from the word go, and I think that's why he got him to the house. So I think this was a pre-planned murder. There is no dignity in death, I accept that, but I'm sorry, you know, dismembering somebody's body and dumping it in black bin liners in the canal is such an indignified way to go, and, you know, it shows a real, real lack of respect for another human being.
For the second time in his life, David Mitchell was charged with murder.
It first appeared at Magistrates Court in Huddersfield, but rather unusually, he refused to get out of his cell. He wouldn't appear before the magistrate. This pattern continued as he was remanded in custody and he went to Leeds Crown Court.
Whether he thought to himself, well, there's nothing in it for me to go there and face the music. I'm just going to stay in my cell, refuse to come out, not cooperate, let them do the worst. I, think that may be the mindset that he had, because in the end of the day, you know, he'd already done 20 years.
A few months later, he tried to withdraw his plea, but that was refused, and he was sentenced.
The judge passed a full life sentence.
In terms of, obviously, we covered what had happened to Robert Hind, and with him being a sex offender, that in itself sparked quite a strong reaction. It kind of split opinion. I think there was people that were of the impression that there's one less sex offender in our community.
There is no real, you know, limit as to what one person can do to another, and, you know, David Mitchell sort of demonstrated that he was never, ever going to get away with it. But, you know, what an horrendous crime. You know, what made him do that to somebody else? I don't know. I don't think he had any other reason other than that he liked exerting power over people that he could exert power over. And twice he's taken somebody's life for no good reason. And he's in the right place. He's in the right place for the rest of his life.
David Mitchell is a killer that Huddersfield will never forget.
He callously killed a girlfriend, and undeterred by more than 20 years in prison, he couldn't resist the urge to kill again. Whether he was motivated by sex or by a twisted moral purpose to kill a sex offender, his crime was shocking, degrading, and terrifying.
And Daniel Sykes was equally inhumane as he killed Polish student Tobias and buried his body beside the canal.
It seems that in a murder town, there are no limits to what human beings can do to each other. Do you feel